Green Connections Radio, where we help you live green, work green, and earn green. I'm Joan Michelson. We are talking innovation with top leaders and thinkers in energy and sustainability and those who are transforming our world. You benefit from my extensive network of C-level executives, entrepreneurs, artists, authors, government leaders, and journalists, and my many years in the media and Fortune 500 companies. Find us online on greenconnectionsradio.com, iTunes, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Stitcher, and wherever you like to listen to your favorite podcasts. So I've been finding us on Spanish language networks, too, even. So with the recent spate of hurricanes, droughts, floods, and fires, the media environment for talking about climate change, clean energy, and sustainability seems to have shifted. Climate change is being talked about more in the mainstream media, but it seems to be only still in the context of natural disasters. At the same time, the business community, however, is integrating sustainability more and more into their strategic planning and communication strategies. And frankly, the public seems to be more open to the topic as well, though there's still a long way to go. So how do we in sustainability and clean energy, those of us who care about the environment and the public health issues related to it, get our message out? How do we expand our audiences? Today, we have one of the best people to talk to about it. Tracy Shario is the former chief of external relations for the Optical Society and former head of communications for the Pew Clean Energy Program. She also teaches at George Washington University, where she worked in the past. And by the way, I am a GW alum, so that's very exciting for me. So I'd like you to meet my friend, Tracy Shario. Welcome to Green Connections, Tracy. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure to be here and speaking with you today.
Thanks. So communicating about sustainability seems to be at a crossroads, as I said in my introduction. First of all, do you agree with my assessment of it?
I do. I believe that the media is still very much a crisis-driven medium and tends to fall back on its usual strategies of covering crisis and natural disasters and trying to humanize that. Whereas, as you point out, businesses, particularly over the last 3 to 5 years, have really made a commitment to sustainability and communicating their business objectives and how they're improving their products and services, in large part due to consumer demand.
So talk about that for a minute. What's been the tipping point to get businesses to put sustainability and clean energy programs more front and center in their communication strategies? What was the catalyst for that?
So I think it's twofold. 10 years ago, when I first started doing sustainability communications and initiatives at the George Washington University, it was very much a student-driven, grassroots engagement strategy. And most corporate leaders, university leaders, didn't give it a tremendous amount of interest. But through that grassroots movement, the need for cleaner products, cleaner energy, safe drinking water, driven by the grassroots, businesses and university and other nonprofit leaders really had no other choice but to listen to what their consumers and stakeholders were asking for. So first of all, it's that grassroots piece. Second of all, I think globally, you've had leadership around the world from governments, particularly in Europe on climate change, the UN Sustainable 2030 goals that were developed about 2 years ago have been a driver, really forcing businesses to take a look at their business practices, their services, their products, not just for consumers, but how they're going to be meeting different mandates in the countries that they do business.
You mean their supply chains?
Correct.
So that's interesting. So it's is it more around clean energy, or is it around, does the reporting make a difference? I mean, there's been the Dow Jones Sustainability Index, the CDP, Carbon Disclosure Project, and other disclosure kinds of criteria and reporting. Has that been a driver? I mean, it's still not entirely required.
Correct. It's not mandated. And I think you're seeing more companies taking a look at carbon and sustainability initiatives on a voluntary basis, because they anticipate that potential for regulation, and it's much better to be ahead of the government regulation curve than behind it.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you think that they're trying to green their brand, or do they see green branding as a value yet?
I do believe so. Accenture recently put out a report, as did Unilever, looking at how businesses are approaching sustainability, both in the context of the UN Sustainable Development Goals, as well as in the context of what consumers are demanding. And both of those studies done within the past year have found that at the consumer level, about 25 to 30% of consumers go about looking for products that have a green stamp of approval or meet a sustainable need, so be it dishwashing soap or organic vegetables. But then also business leaders are taking into account the need for what consumers are wanting and taking the sustainability initiative more seriously and developing metrics and business goals that they can deliver to their stakeholders and meet their corporate objectives. So I think, you know, even 5 years ago, greenwashing was a concern. But more and more, you know, you have companies from Walmart to Marriott that really have made sustainability part of their corporate DNA that is prevalent throughout the organization, not just what's being marketed to consumers.
Well, are they doing it because they save money when they save energy, or are they doing it because they see that there's a profit center in the eco-driven consumer and business buyer?
Yeah, wouldn't we like to all believe that corporations and even, you know, NGOs and nonprofits are doing things purely for environmental benefits? But yes, bottom line, for corporations especially, there's a business imperative in conserving resources and in saving money. And when you can power your own facilities through wind or solar power, like Microsoft does in many instances, and many other technology companies are looking to power their data centers through clean and renewable energy, they are doing that not just for the environmental benefits, but because it saves them money, and it also helps bring that consistency and reliability of power.
Oh, that's a good point. I would imagine it helps them recruit as well.
I think so, especially with this millennial generation, which has a whole different value set than some other generations. They're definitely expecting more from their employers, and clean energy and sustainability initiatives are a central part of that.
Yeah, I saw some research recently. I think it was 52% of potential recruits will be more inclined to work for a company that has a overt sustainability initiative that's front and center than those that don't. I thought that was a pretty interesting statistic. So what works to develop a communications strategy? I mean, take me, you developed a bazillion different campaigns. So let's say, you know, we're developing a campaign for a new green product for a company. Where do you begin? Take me into the room.
I believe that any communication strategy begins with an understanding of your audience and how you need to engage your stakeholders. And then it's developing the appropriate multi-channel strategy for your messaging platform. So for some companies, that's driven by social media. For others, it's a third-party credibility, traditional media relations outreach. And for most, it's a combination of the two. But I think the important thing here is that, you know, when you're looking at a content marketing strategy, that you're creating a larger conversation about clean energy and sustainability. You're not just promoting a product or a service. And the most effective communication strategies make their products and service secondary to the larger conversation. That is what engages audiences. That is what engages stakeholders. And particularly, as you pointed out, millennials are very driven by that. They see right through any kind of marketing effort that is just about promoting a brand and a product. they really want to know that the company is not just talking the talk, but walking the walk. Are they engaging their employees through service initiatives? Are they really getting out in the community and doing good works beyond just selling a hotel room or some other product?
Mm-hmm. Is it around brand purpose, would you say, or is it specific to sustainability? I mean, you mentioned being out in the community, so that kind of broadens it out. That's you know, just people rather than people planet.
Correct. I think that a good sustainability effort is about action, not just the corporate goals and corporate deliverables, but how the entity is engaging the community in the conversation. Are they out there doing clean water projects, or are they just out there on Earth Day doing some community service work and doing a social media contest or campaign to take advantage of one day of the year in a calendar when every day really should be Earth Day when it comes to sustainability and a business practice and corporate philosophy?
Yes, when I was acting head of communications for Earth Day Network, that was a line we used, was every day is Earth Day.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be that I remember there were companies that were just really promoting their green initiatives and, you know, like NBC Universal Green Week and things like that around Earth Day. But there does seem to be a louder discussion of sustainability programs throughout the year. And what I don't know is if it's just because I'm in that world and I see them all the time, or if it's for the public at large. Do you know what I mean?
No, I do. I think, you know, when you live and breathe clean energy and sustainability, you think everybody is also engaged and seeing the same messages and hearing the same things. But I think when you have companies like Microsoft, who's put a price on carbon, when you have, you know, fossil fuel entities like Exxon and other oil companies that are actually truly trying to raise the conversation about the need to be engaged on these issues, that's very different than it was even 5 years ago. And again, I think that's driven by two things. I think that's driven by grassroots movements and the pressure from green groups. And then also, you know, the writing on the walls is that, you know, 5, 10, 15 years from now, there is going to be pretty significant government regulations that are going to mandate new environmental rules. Not going to happen in this administration, but it's going to happen.
So what are the trends, what are some of the more creative communications strategies that you've seen work, whether they were yours or someone else's? What are some of the more creative campaigns that you've seen that you think have been really effective?
I think the key is about audience engagement. And so there are many different ways that you can do that. And they're all really kind of driven by the power of pictures. And so whether it's a contest or it's a, you know, week-long promotion where you're getting folks to, you know, submit photos on their particular definition of sustainability or recycling or whatever your theme is for the week, really getting your core audience to engage through pictures and through social media is incredibly, incredibly powerful. And so there's a lot of different creative things that people can do in that regards. And I also think that one thing I believe works very, very well is engaging in thought leader testimonials. I mean, it's tried and true. It's always been kind of part and parcel of the public relations toolbox, so to speak. But whenever you can get someone like a Leonardo DiCaprio or a Justin Bieber or a you know, person of that stature to join your message and to engage the audience, that is always very successful. And there are different ways that you can do that.
Hmm. So tell me about one that, you know, first of all, let me back up for a second, because everybody uses this word engage, right? Engage your audience. You want engagement. What exactly is engagement? I mean, is it just, you know, liking something on Facebook, or is it or retweeting something on Twitter? I mean, if you do it once, does that really count as engagement?
That's a very good question, and it's something that I think every communicator struggles with, because you have all of these output metrics. We had X number of likes. We have X number of people following our pages. You know, we got so many retweets. That is kind of baseline. What you really want are people who are participating in the conversation. So are they writing comments on your Facebook page? Are they responding to other people's comments on Facebook page? When they retweet, are they writing their own introduction to the content? And unfortunately, on Twitter, what we find, research continues to show that a lot of people retweet stuff without ever actually reading the article or going to the link that they're forwarding on to their audience. So you can only put so much credibility in those baseline numbers. But when you have individuals who are taking the time to post original content, take photos and share them on Instagram, for example, and all the fun filters and things that you can do on Instagram and Snapchat, that really is participating, having your stakeholders participate in the dialogue. And that's what we mean by engagement. It's going beyond the baseline numbers of likes and retweets.
But people are so busy. I mean, everybody is overwhelmed. Is that really realistic? I mean, if we all expected everybody to participate in our campaigns, nobody would ever get anything done.
The advantage that you have on environmental issues is that this audience is more engaged and more active than others. So, for example, a typical marketing campaign would have a response rate of roughly 1%. On environmental issues, that response rate is 3%. So it sounds pretty minor, but it's three times the average marketing campaign. Pretty significant. So you already have stakeholders and grassroots who are anxious and willing to be advocates. And so it's just figuring out the ways to engage them. And I've been talking about online. I mean, there are certainly, you know, offline, old-fashioned face-to-face ways that you can engage them, be it a cleanup or a race for a cause or things of that nature. But cause marketing has a role to play in sustainability. And, you know, I can't think of any examples off the top of my head of people who are doing it well, but it's definitely there for the taking.
Events are big, right? And think of the Alzheimer's Ice Bucket Challenge,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Which they had no clue on earth it was going to take off this way. I mean, it was like somebody's kind of spontaneous idea for some little thing. And I think they raised some astronomical amount of money from that, too.
Yes, they did.
I mean, that was my other question is, you know, all these, and you sort of alluded to it, all these likes and whatever are fine, and even posting photos is fine, but does it drive sales? I mean, do people then, you know, the point is to, you know, to sell the cleaning detergent or to sell the T-shirt or to sell, you know, to get a donation to, you know, the Optical Society or whatever, so or Earth Day Network. Do these actually drive dollars being exchanged?
Well, I can tell you from the Optical Society's perspective, the campaigns that we ran last year as part of our centennial to raise funds for the OSA Foundation actually did have an impact. And the society, for the first time in its history, received its first $1 million gift. So the strategy paid off in a pretty significant financial way. You know, the challenge is how do you repeat that absent some major event like a 100th anniversary. So that is always the challenge, how to keep the appeals fresh and relevant. But on the consumer side, I definitely think that if there wasn't a bottom line, companies would not be promoting their sustainability initiatives. They wouldn't be going through the efforts to create sustainability offices. I mean, Walmart has a chief sustainability officer. MGM Grand has a chief sustainability officer. That may not be their exact title, but they have someone at the management level who is responsible for sustainability because it does have a business impact.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, yes, it's Cindy Ortega. She's the senior VP and chief sustainability officer. She's been a guest on Green Connections and spoken on panels of mine at MGM Resort. So I know her well, actually. But that's a very good point. But there are people who think, I mean, what she told me, for example, was the initial business impact was reducing their costs in energy, plain and simple, their facilities costs. So it was reducing costs. And then they found that they were attracting a whole new market of guests by promoting these programs and promoting that they were doing these programs. But the initial driver was cost reduction. Absolutely. What are your favorite tools for leveraging social media for these kinds of for green messaging, for sustainability oriented messaging? You've mentioned a few, but what's your go-tos?
So my go-to tools for social media and public relations, I think are there are a couple. While we know that emotions are a driver in most narrative, I still love my facts. You know, the did you know this percentage of businesses are engaged in clean energy? Did you know that X number of countries have signed the Paris Agreement? Those types of facts, I think, are still very compelling. And then the other piece, which gets to more personalization of information, is the testimonial. So anytime that you can bring out a well-respected, be it a government leader, a celebrity, an author, a diplomat, someone who has gone on the record and in support of your issue, in support of sustainability, in support of climate change, I think that those testimonials are incredibly important and can be incorporated into your own messaging to bring credibility to what it is that you're doing. And then ultimately, whatever messaging you're putting out there and whatever strategies you're employing, you have to be authentic. And so your business or your nonprofit has to not just be talking the talk, but you actually have to have the metrics, the proof points to show that you are being more energy efficient or you are saving water. Because if you don't have the facts to back up those claims, then you lose credibility and you have no authenticity. So just to summarize, I think it's facts, testimonials to help personalize your story, and then always being authentic.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And in fact, I would even go so far as to say that you also have to admit where your weaknesses are on this, you know, and that, you know, we're working on this so that if because people who there's always going to be somebody who says, oh, yeah, but you're, you know, buying your oil from South Africa or whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. And so you have to know what's going to come up. And you have to have a strategy for dealing with that or disclose it right away yourself because transparency is the name of the game, right, for credibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Can I just add one more thing?
Sure.
That gets to your earlier question about creativity and campaigns? And this is somewhat out of the sustainability realm, but I think one of the most creative campaigns that I've seen within the last couple of years is the Dollar Shave Club. Which is using exactly what I just talked about. It's about facts, it's about humor, and it's about authenticity. And so the Dollar Shave Club has been so successful because they basically said, you're being marketed $12 razor blades that you don't need. Your grandfather used one. We're going to take you back to a simpler time and a cheaper blade. And they've done it through humor. They've, you know, employed all sorts of creative marketing. And it's just, I don't know, it's funny and it's authentic. And they've been very successful because they proved that they could produce a product more cheaply, more effectively, and sell it more broadly than the big guys.
Than Gillette, huh? Well, that's interesting because you would think that they would want to sell more blades also, because the more blades they sell, the more money they make.
Mm-hmm. So, well, they want you to buy blades more frequently because they're cheaper.
Right, right. Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So what do we as communicators need to do better?
I think we as communicators, first and foremost, need to develop plans with measurable objectives. So many times we've got great ideas and we just promote a lot of content without really thinking about how we want it to drive and connect to a business objective. So without understanding the business strategy and what the business goals are, communications can end up just being a bit of noise. And so if you understand the connection between sales and business goals, you can develop some really smart, measurable communication strategies and objectives.
So it's not just getting on the Today Show, it's how many sales of the product getting on the Today Show drives.
Correct. I mean, Today Show brings you tremendous credibility, but that appearance has to be connected to a business objective.
Right. And you have to be able to track it somehow. You have to have a system set up for tracking it.
Correct.
So before I let you go, let me ask you a few questions about you. So you mentioned that you got into the sustainability space about 10 years ago. How did you get into the sustainability space? Tell me about that.
So I was the spokesperson at George Washington University in 2007 when we had a new president, Stephen Knapp, who very quickly in his first week or so said, I want to be a leader in sustainability. We're in the nation's capital, and there's no reason why this university can't make a commitment to climate change. And the university was already in the process of developing a 20-year campus plan where all new buildings would be LEED certified. So the foundation was there, and the new leadership came in and took advantage of that student grassroots energy and a lot of our faculty who were very engaged on the issue as well, and got staff involved. And within about 6 months, we put together a sustainability action plan, hired a director of sustainability to manage and implement that plan. GW was the first in the nation's capital to sign the university and college president's climate commitment to become carbon neutral. And we did a whole host of other things. And so, you know, I personally was like, climate change, I haven't really paid that much attention to it. And once I learned the facts, I'm like, oh my gosh, we have as a society, particularly as a university, yes, we have a moral imperative to do something about this. And so that was kind of where I caught the bug.
Oh, that's cool. I love that. And as a GW alum, I like it even more. Did that mean that he wanted to talk more about the sustainability programs and integrate it more into the curriculum as well?
Yes, and the university has done that. I think the most recent addition is the Food Institute and Jose Andreas, celebrity chef, mm-hmm. In D.C., has been integral to that, and it's been very, very successful. So I think every major degree program probably can boast some level of sustainability. Certainly where I teach in the Graduate School of Political Management in the Strategic PR program, there's a whole course on issues management and reputation management, which I am involved in, and sustainability is a big part of what we talk about.
Oh, cool. I'd love to sit down in your class sometime. Maybe that would be fun. Okay, so tell us about a moment midway through your career, whatever midway feels like to you, when you had to make a critical decision that in retrospect seems like a turning point. What it was, how you made that decision, and how you feel about it now.
Boy, several decision points, but I think one that defines that mid-career point. When I left GW, I was sort of like, well, do I stay in university communications? what is it that I want to do when I grow up kind of thing. And I'm like, I came to Washington to be an advocate and to get into political communications. And I had started out in that. I was a government relations representative lobbyist for the National Utility Contractors Association early in my career. But I very quickly got off that track and for about 10 years did technology and university communications. And so when it was time to make another move, I really wanted to go back to advocacy and build my credentials there, which is what led me to the Pew Charitable Trust. So I now, because of the work I'd done at GW, had the sustainability clean energy bug, and Pew was doing a global climate change campaign and a lot of great work on clean energy. And that's how I ended up getting back into public policy and advocacy. So it was a little bit of soul searching because it was kind of scary, but I've been very well pleased with my career trajectory over the last 6-7 years because of that choice.
Oh, that's cool. No, I love that. And that's what it takes, right? Is soul searching. So what would you suggest to a woman who's mid-career? Okay, not somebody who's just starting out their career, but someone like you were talking about who's mid-career, who has some experience, who wants to use her education and her experience to make a difference. How would you suggest she go about looking at her next move or where she is today?
I think it's twofold. One, look at where you want to go and understand the nomenclature of that area. So for me, I had to think a little bit differently in terms of communications because advocacy communications has a similar toolbox as traditional PR, but its audiences are different, its nomenclature is different. So familiarize yourself with the terminology of the area that you want to get into. But it always comes down to networking. And, you know, don't hesitate just because you haven't spoken to an old boss for 5 or 6 years or an old colleague for a decade. Don't hesitate to pick up the phone and call them and say, "Yee, I still think of you from time to time. Would love to get together for coffee and pick your brain about X, Y, or Z." Because the power of networks and connections, particularly in a city like Washington, D.C., but anywhere really, are what make a career most rewarding and can help you make those types of transitions.
Well, and that's a great point. I love that. And that's, you can't assume that A, they remember you, and B, that they're even thinking of you. And C, you don't know what's going on in their world or who's talking to them about what they need.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. I mean, especially in the cities where you want to live, right, or in the places where you want to live and the areas where you want to work, I think that's critical. And I love what you said about, you know, don't worry about the passage of time, especially if you had a good relationship with them, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, this is great. This is terrific. So thank you so much for joining us today on Green Connections Radio, Tracy. I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much for the invitation, Joan. It's always a pleasure chatting with you, and best of success.
Thank you. Thank you so much. So what did you hear Tracy say? How would you suggest we reach more people like you? Tweet it to us at Joan Michelson or post it on our Facebook page and like the page while you're there. Ask to join our new private Facebook group as well. Or email it to us at info@greenconnectionsradio.com. You can also leave it on iTunes with your review. I'm Joan Michelson. Thank you for joining us. See you next time.
Hi, my name is David Goldberg, president of Edge Studio, a voiceover company. We oversee professional narrators and voice actors for sales videos, training videos, telephone pre-recorded systems, commercials, web videos, and all applications requiring voiceover. And in fact, for over 20 years and in over 100 languages, we have been considered the most trusted and the friendliest leader in the voiceover industry. We're a green company with efforts towards sustainability at all of our studio locations. EdgeStudio.com. Sound people who are happy to help.